Hi, boys and girls. Like you, Santa is listening to the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com. Oh, 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 oh.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock.
Greetings and welcome to this, the 32nd episode of the Merry Little Podcast. My name is Jeff Westover of MyMerryChristmas.com, home of Christmas year-round and an internet celebration of Christmas now closing out year number 27. This podcast is the light version of one of the oldest and most comprehensive Christmas podcasts online, that which was born, and that we still call the Merry Podcast. But we keep it hidden from the masses. It is only found on the Merry Forums of MyMerryChristmas.com, home to thousands of year-round celebrants of Christmas. Each episode of the Merry Podcast is an hour or so long, and it features Christmas in depth like you hear nowhere else. If you enjoy this, the Merry Little Podcast, head on over to the Merry Forums and join us for the real deal. In fact, the most recent episode of the Merry Podcast has given rise to this little episode you're hearing now. That podcast, number 63, featured Christmas of 1968, a crazy year by any measurement, but also an important bellwether kind of year for Christmas, too. It takes us more than an hour to tell the story of just that year, and we actually share part of that episode here, because what happened at Christmas in 1968 it's just that important. I find we have a very diverse audience here on the Merry Little Podcast, and the feedback runs the gamut, but I know when I delve into the not-too-distant past of Christmas history, I sometimes, from our millennial friends especially, get that awkward pause when they realize how old that I am. When I say that I am a child of the 1960s, that just doesn't compute to many of them. And I get that. Yes, kids, I was there when The Grinch was first broadcast on television. It was an age of rotary phones and Harvest Gold kitchen appliances. I can remember watching Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer in the 1960s when it came out. I can recall aluminum Christmas trees and watching the Andy Williams Christmas special and actually witness my parents both host a fondue party, and once we even flocked our own Christmas tree in the garage. All the things that seemed to mark Christmas in the 1960s, I had a chance to experience. Well, if it took me over an hour to cover Christmas of just 1968, how much of Christmas during the entirety of the 1960s can we cover in just one little episode in the Merry Little Podcast? Well, of course we can't. But there are some high water marks of Christmas in the 1960s that we didn't discuss in the episode of Christmas 1968. And we should talk about those things, and we should talk about them here. The first has to do with the little bit of music nobody before the 1960s considered Christmas music. But now, when you hear it, everybody thinks Christmas. That, of course, comes directly from the soundtrack of A Charlie Brown Christmas, a production of the 1960s that still enjoys tremendous popularity and whose message has aged very well. And it all came from the fertile mind of a man named Charles Schulz. Born in Minneapolis, Minnesota in 1922, Charles Monroe Schulz was about as average an American as a boy could get. He was shy, he loved to draw, and he loved comic strips. In fact, his nickname, Sparky, was taken from a character in a beloved comic strip of his youth. The name was given to him by his uncle while Schulz was quite young, and those close to him up until his death still called him Sparky. Those few character traits about a man who would become considered a creative genius generations later go far to explain how much of himself landed in his classic comic strip Peanuts and why he connected so easily with his readers. Schulz himself was the model for the central character of the strip, Charlie Brown. When he was in first grade, his mother helped him get Valentines for everybody in his class so that nobody would be offended by not getting one, but he felt too shy to put them in the box at the front of the classroom, so he took them all home again to his mother. That story about Charlie Schultz, Sparky, and countless regular human emotions and stories like it are continuously conveyed in his comic strip that he vowed would outlive him. And I would tell you, quite honestly, that as a kid of the 60s and the 70s, I read Peanuts religiously. He was nearly right, of course, in saying that the strip would outlive him. The very last Peanuts strip ran just a few hours after Charles Schultz passed away in the year 2000. But let's not sugarcoat anything here. The contribution of Charles Schultz to Christmas cannot be understated. In 1965, right at the height of print popularity for Charlie Brown and the Peanuts, the Coca-Cola Company approached producers connected to Schultz about creating a Christmas television special that Coke could sponsor. The producer said that was possible, but Coke wanted something that year for Christmas 1965, which was just 6 months away. When they took that idea back to Schultz, he quickly outlined an idea for a television special, and it was approved by Coke within 24 hours. Now, bear in mind that Charlie Brown had never been outside of print at this point in time. He'd never been on a screen. They would have to make the Peanuts move, talk, and tell a story, complete with music, and they would have to prepare that for television within 6 months. Teaming with others who had never done anything like it before either, they created what we now know as a Charlie Brown Christmas. During its creation, they seemed to break a lot of the rules. The voices for the actors would be real children, many of them were amateurs, and the music would come from jazz pianist Vince Guaraldi. None of this, of course, sounded like Christmas to anyone. There was one other part of the creation of a Charlie Brown Christmas that created divisions between Schultz and others on the project, and that was the inclusion of Bible verses in telling the story of Christmas. When they asked him why it needed to be done, Schultz said, "If we don't do it, who will?" Schultz, of course, at this point in his life, was a very devout man, even having served as a Sunday school teacher for many years in his adult life. Nothing the network had to say when they previewed it just before it aired, a few days before the 9th of December, made the producers feel any better. They felt that what they had created in that compressed 6 month window had maybe ruined Charlie Brown forever. And the network hated it. They hated everything about it. They hated the music. They hated the Bible bit. They hated the story. They hated the actors. They even hated the animation of it all. And they thought it would go nowhere, the whole thing. But what could they do? They had a contract with Coke, and they had to comply with it. They had to air the special. So they aired it on December 9th. And they were shocked to see that not only did the special get rave reviews, it set a viewership record that Christmas specials before and since can only really dream about. Now, of all the things I could have talked about concerning Christmas in the 1960s, I chose a Charlie Brown's Christmas for one particular reason. The world was really changing at that point in history during the 1960s. Christmas was changing, and many tried to pull Christmas along with the changes of the world, but Charles Schultz, and specifically Charlie Brown, said, "Wait a minute, not so fast." And they stubbornly clung to Christmas tradition despite the changes going on just about everywhere. It was about a year later, Christmas 1966, that Stevie Wonder, by then an established star after emerging as Little Stevie Wonder in 1963, released his first Christmas single. His song, which is Christmas in Every Way, also marks well what the 60s were all about. Listen to the words.
Someday at Christmas, men won't be boys, playing with bombs like kids play with toys. One warm December, our hearts will see a world where men are free.
And there were in the same country shepherds, abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them. And they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God, and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
On Christmas Eve 1967, Martin Luther King Jr. would give what would be his last Christmas sermon, in an eerily foretelling of the turbulence and violence in the year ahead, that very kind of violence that would take his own life, King had this to say.
Somehow, we must be able to stand up before our most bitter opponents and say, we shall match your capacity to inflict suffering by our capacity to endure suffering. We will meet your physical force with soul force. Do to us what you will, and we will still love you. We cannot in all good conscience obey your unjust laws and abide by the unjust system, because non-cooperation with evil is as much a moral obligation as is cooperation with good, and so throw us in jail. We will still love you. Bomb our homes and threaten our children, and as difficult as it is, we will still love you. Send your hooded perpetrators of violence into our communities at the midnight hour, and drag us out on some wayside road and leave us half dead as you beat us, and we will still love you. Send your propaganda agents around the country and make it appear that we are not fit culturally and otherwise for integration, but we'll still love you. But be ye assured that we will wear you down by our capacity to suffer. And one day we will win our freedom. We will not only win freedom for ourselves, we will so appeal to your heart and conscience that we will win you in the process. And our victory will be a double victory. If that is to be peace on earth and goodwill toward men, we must finally believe in the ultimate morality of the universe. Believe that all reality hinges on moral foundations. Something must remind us of this as we somehow stand in the Christmas season and think of the Easter season simultaneously, for the two somehow go together. Christ came to show us the way. Men loved darkness rather than the light, and they crucified him. And there on Good Friday on the cross, it was still dark. But then Easter came, and Easter is an eternal reminder of the fact that truth crushed earth will rise again.
In 1968, I was 5 years old. That's a big year for anyone, and it sticks in my memory for many, many reasons. Of course, I didn't understand all that I was seeing and experiencing, and much of it only came to me years later when it was shared with me by those who were there. In 1968, as I started my first year in public school, my dad was in his final year of college. Married by then for 8 years with the mortgage and 4 children with my mother, my dad was finishing up his political science degree at Cal Berkeley. I can recall him talking about how he would be trying to get to class and had to step over the bodies of protesters who were blocking entrances to the school. I can recall watching television for many reasons that year and seeing the violence shown on the news. I can recall many times my mom shutting the TV off while the news was on. It was a disheartening time, and I think as Christmas rolled around, many were looking for answers and inspiration. And it came. It came that Christmas on Christmas Eve and on television in the form of a Christmas Eve broadcast that was unexpected, largely unscripted, and surprisingly positive for a world grown weary of constant bad news. On December 21st, NASA launched the first manned mission on its massive Saturn V rocket to send astronauts for the first time to the moon and back. They were not to land on the moon, that was still 6 months away in the summer of 1969, but they would orbit the moon 10 times in a world time first of sending humans away from Earth to circle another celestial body. Knowing that what they were doing would be historic, they searched for what to say at such a moment when the world would be watching on Christmas Eve.
It's easy. Most of the people will be listening to this crew around Christmas Eve, and they should be reading from the first 10 verses of Genesis, which is the basic foundation of most of the world's religions.
And there, on live TV, they sent out this Christmas message.
Now approaching lunar sunrise, and for all the people back on Earth, the crew of Apollo 8 has a message that we would like to send to you. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good, and divided the light from the darkness.
And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And the evening and the morning were the first day. And God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. And God made the firmament, and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven. And the evening and the morning were the second day.
And God said, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters called he seas. And God saw that it was good. And from the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night, good luck, a Merry Christmas, and God bless all of you on the good earth.
The 1960s were extraordinary years. Years that, frankly, a number of podcasts could spend hours discussing. They were a time when we learned a lot about ourselves, and we didn't always like what we saw. It is sad and ironic that many of the very same issues, the very same debates, the very same ugliness that we fought in the 1960s are still with us, and that Christmas, with all of its love and its tradition and great faults as well, is still part of our lives. The answer is there, right in front of us. I pray that the words of Dr. King resonate still with those who love peace and with those who love Christmas. Please join us at the Merry Forums of My Merry Christmas and take a listen to the full edition of the Merry Podcast about Christmas of 1968. For MyMerryChristmas.com, this is Jeff Westover wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas.